It was a baptism of love. And Phyllis is, I mean, honestly, I really encourage you, look it up, YouTube, whatever access you have, and there are books, and eventually we'll have a few books myself. And almost all of his teachings, just they carry this. And Aaron, who came, Aaron Simmons, that came last week, he is kind of a spiritual son of this man. And you can, and I remember meeting Aaron and going, man, you got something on you. What is it? Like, there's something a little different about you. And as Aaron was here, was it just last weekend already? It seems like, you know, it seems like so much. Yeah. And I told Aaron as he left, I said, there was such an ease with you being here. It just was an ease, and everything that he did, and his friend Micah. I just appreciated their ministry and just their real ease, but the very, very intense at the same time. And it's that thing. It's that thing of getting into this place where you're truly in. You're truly in the spirit, living a life in the spirit, opposed to that soulish life where we're striving and struggling. And often a lot of our prayers are coming out of that. Who was it? Who said that this morning? That about, I can't remember. It seems like it was in one of the testimonies. But anyways, that we're like this, we're so prone when we, when we go to approach the Lord to try to get it, and the concept of fasting is I'll sacrifice and that will gain me access. And I've fasted a lot of times through my life and different lengths of fasted, but I know there's always this conflict, and I think I had it worked out, but it's so important not to be fasting to earn something. That's not the point. And it's hard for us growing up in our culture to get this right because we're so performance oriented. We get paid according to performance. I mean, we go, yeah, and what's wrong with that? I mean, you know, like I'm not even against all of that, except that when you come to the Lord, you can't earn anything. You never can. You don't earn things. And this Leif Hetland, he has a teaching. Again, you can access this on YouTube. I listen and listen and listen to it. It's that impacting for me. And he comes up to the stage and he sets up three chairs. And he uses as an illustration, the first chair is life in the spirit. When you're in that chair, you're in the spirit. You're living life in the spirit. Then there's a second chair that is the soulish life. And the person in chair number one and the person in chair number two, they're both Christians. But it's how you go about everything. And then there's a third chair, and that's the, you know, not the unbeliever, the not connected at all. So so he begins to use those chairs as description or that illustration as this place. And in chair number one, you receive. You're a receiver. You're primarily a receiver. Now, is that how you live your Christian life? Is that how you approach the Lord? Do you approach him as in receiving? I'm telling you, I have a history of this in my private life with working things out with the Lord. And then I get on what I think is a good track, and I'm going to do something for him. And I went through this process in the tent, and I would spend a lot of time going there and praying. And I was trying to break into something. It's the weirdest thing when you're really focused and concentrated and consecrating yourself and all these good things, and there's something in your spirit that is saying, this is all great, but I'm missing something. And this wasn't from anywhere outward. This was from me trying to connect and trying to interact. But because of sitting in the wrong chair all the time approaching, There is this thing, I will do this. I will do this for you. I will gain your favor by doing this. And I had this, like, this isn't quite right. And I didn't feel rebuked from the Lord, but I could tell I wasn't tuned. I wasn't dialed in to the exact right thing. And I would often leave with this frustration, and I was spending time and praying prayers. All that was great. However, there was a sense like something's still not right. That's why when all this time I hear this teaching and I hear the revelation that Leif Hedlund, and I went, oh, I got to get me more of that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to get that. I got to go after this. And so even the prayers for the revival and those kind of things, if we can approach those things from the promises that we have about revival, that's a whole different thing than if we feel like we've got to get God's attention for him to do anything. It's a big difference. A little difference, but a big difference. And he wants us to partner with him. He wants us to be involved in all of this. I've made statements recently. I don't want to be left out. Whatever's happening here, there, where, I'm not being left out. You know, I'm like that little kid, like, you're not leaving me out, you know? And my hands clutched to whatever, you know, you're watching mom or dad or whoever, like, you're not leaving without me. So whatever I'm doing, I'm going to keep my eye on you, because when you head to the car, I'm going to be in the back seat. Have you ever been a little kid and dad left or whatever? Yeah. You're bawling your eyes out because you got left behind? Like, yeah, that thing. That didn't happen too often with us. We found a way to go with it. And he was crazy enough to take us every place. So, yeah. Not going to be left behind. Not going to be left out. But when you live this life as a true son, then you don't have to earn. You receive and you approach things. So from chair number one, healing is a promise. From chair number two, healing is a problem. We go, how can I get that? But from chair number one, when we're living in this truly in the spirit, then we receive everything. We receive his love. We receive promises, like we function in life out of promise. And it takes the stress out. It takes this all. I can tell you right now, so much of the anxiety that's in your life is because you're trying to perform. Trying to keep up appearances. You're trying to get it right. You're trying to look right. You're trying to know it. You're trying to, and then we bring that into our Christianity, and we're so full of anxiety and striving, it's pathetic. We've got a great message that nobody wants because we're full of this other thing. But when you speak and minister and share out of this place of promise and being a true son, then there's an ease to you, and people are attracted to that. There's a loveliness to the message and to what you have, because you're not trying to force this. You're not trying to make anything. You're walking around, you know, like, I've got $1 million. See what I'm driving? You know, see the clothes I'm wearing? Like, you've got the evidence on you. I'm loved. Well, you know, you look loved. I mean, absolutely. You want to, like, we all have this vanity. We blame it on women, but men are just as bad. We all want to look lovely, and we want, you know, women want to look lovely. We used to use a different word. We want to be attractive. We want to be whatever. That's not even a bad thing. But the element in us that is truly attractive is that thing on us. You know, worship looks good on you. The spirit looks good on you. That's what makes you attractive. Forget the, you know, I'm glad for the makeup and the whatever, and, you know, guys shave their hair and, you know, heads and do whatever, not shave, but, you know, take care of yourself. That's good. Don't stop doing that. Don't stop wearing deodorant. But it's that the real thing that makes a person like attractive is that confidence. The real thing that is beautiful about women is when they're connected with the Father, when there's a wholeness about them. That is attractive. That's beautiful. And the same with us. So I was, and that's why I say I woke this morning and I've been just going after this in my heart. And I'm like, I awake in the morning and their striving starts right away. I'm trying to, and like, that shouldn't be, that's even a bad confession. I'm sorry that you had to hear that. But I'm like, I'm going to get to a new place. And from that place, I'm going to wake up in the place. I'm not going to have to try to get there again. I'm going to wake up in peace. I'm going to wake up from the posture of being there. And if I bless the Lord, oh my soul, it'll be because I'm seeing the Lord. Like I'm there because it's just the song in my heart. It's the thing in my heart. And I know I can get there. If somebody, that's like when we were in this dilemma of we got to find a new place to meet and there was no place to go. And I found out a church had met in a tent for 3 years while they built their building. And as soon as I never had to see that. I never had to go see how they did that. All I had to do was hear it. And of course, I had enough people around me to come make that happen. And I went, we can do this. We can do that. We're going to get a tent, and that's where we're going to have church. And we did. It went a little longer than I hoped. But anyways. That was about hearing something, and I went, yeah, we can do that. And so we did it in great style. Same with this. I can get there. I can enter into this thing because I find that there's still too much worry and anxiety. And even when, especially, actually, it's safer when you don't try to try. You don't try to change. You just stay in your little safe, whatever, you know, blah, blah, life. And then you try to get an upgrade and you try to start living in a different place. That can create a lot of anxiety. If you don't do that in the right way. And so we have great promise, but in order to get there, we don't need to be better workers and more bigger strivers. We've got to find this place of being able to receive and being a son. And so already, as soon as I meditate on that, it calms me the heck down. That's good. That's a good thing. That anxiety that starts to build, and this is where a lot of offense comes out of. A lot of weird things that you feel very strongly, it comes out of this because you feel undone, unwanted, left out, surpassed, overpassed, driven around, driven over, walked over. And as soon as you get back to just being a son and receiving from the Lord, you can let all that go. You go, I don't have to be smarter than anybody else. I'm a son. I don't have to have a nicer car than anybody else. I'm a son. I don't have to have things different. I don't have to have those things. Those things aren't what, but I'm a son. I'm just a son. So when Rob and I were little, you know, running around in gum boots, we wore gum boots, or there's like high rubber boots, you know. And that's what they were called then. No insulation. We wore them summer, winter. We wore them to go swimming. I don't know. We were just left, raised by wolves, left alone too much. That was the attire. We had these little black gumboots we wore everywhere. We'd have our swimming suits on and still, you know. And we had seasons of life where we never took the swimming trunks off, day or night. They just stayed on. They were just under the clothes. Because every day we went swimming at the local little, you know, the lake in Summitville. Or no, I mean, sorry, Robertsville, same ville, same kind of ville. And our father, who had this, he was a diesel mechanic, but his real love was farming. He just eventually had to be a farmer because he just loved it so much. When we were little and joined him in that, you know, if we had a little John Deere tractor that went putt, 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 you know, we were like all that in a bag of chips. I mean, that was, it just wasn't any better. And life with him when we were young was, we were just so secure. It didn't matter. Like, we looked at what we had. I remember walking through the store and JCPenney's and whatever, and my mom was sick often in our life, so he would take us shopping for clothes and do things. And I remember walking around with my little nose up in the air, like, you poor, stupid people. You're not farmers. You're not who we are. Isn't that funny? But that comes out of this confidence of being a son. Like, you don't have my life. My life's just, like, amazing. We had to go on adventures in the woods, and we have animals and barns, and we play tag in the rafters of the barn. You know, we did things that, you know, someone would probably call social services on us now. We had a great life. And I just felt sorry for people that didn't have our life and get to do what we did. That's the life of being a son. Now, like, we were pathetic. We weren't poor, but we didn't have much. But we were sons. We lived the lives with our father. I was reading one of these books by Leif Hetland called Seeing Through Heaven's Eyes. And this phrase captured me. It was this: we're either going to be overwhelmed by God or overwhelmed by everything else. I went, that's it. It rocked me because it gave, something clicked in my spirit about, from that phrase. And you're like, okay, that was good, but was it that good? It was, because it changes why I worship. It gets even worship and interacting with the Lord out of chair number two and back to chair number one. Remember, chair number two, you're a Christian, but you're soulishly trying to go after everything that there is to go after. But in chair number one, where you're just receiving, where you're truly a son, where you don't have to prove anything, where you wake up in the morning and daddy loves you, and there just is nothing about, there's no more to it. You're loved, you're accepted, you're provided for, and you don't have to, you had to run away from home to get away from it. That's what life as being a son is like. You had to decide, I'm leaving, I'm out of here, and you got to go run away from home. That's how you get rid of that. You got to really determine, I don't want this, I don't want you, I'm leaving. Other than that, no sweat. You're good. You can even screw up a couple times in a day, and you don't get sold into slavery or anything else radical. You could stay. You're either overwhelmed by God, which is what happens in worship, or you're overwhelmed by everything else. And just because you're a believer and just because you're trying to live the Christian life doesn't protect you from being flat out overwhelmed. You can get your eyes on some great endeavors in the Lord. You're just sure Jesus Christ himself will be totally impressed with you if you pull this off, and get overwhelmed in it. Start experiencing depression. Lose your joy. Become grouchy again. I know you've all been liberated from that. Look in Psalms with me, Psalms 134. 143. Ready, set, hike. I was watching those quarterbacks, I finally watched a little bit of football there at the Super Bowl. And our dilemma when I try to lead the band in any way is my hands are tied up and my voice is in the microphone that everybody can hear. So it's hard to say where I'm going unless I just announce to everybody, go back to the court, whatever. And so everybody else, even Summer, she's got a hand free. So we're teaching her hand signals and I'm going to do this again and whatever. And, it's like, Rick, give us a sign. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Like, I got to stay here. I'm tied up. Everything's, both hands are tied up and whatever. And I watched the Super Bowl and I went, I know what I'll do. I'll do this. And you all know what I'll, Yeah, and twice I'll look like some Yehu up there. You get a line, I'll get a pull. Psalms 143, through four. Oh my gosh, bad humor. Was it 3 through 4 that I said? 143. You got to keep up with me. Sorry. And it's not easy. You have to have discernment, not just ears. Have to discern, is that what he meant, or is he dyslexic this morning? Yes, 143, verses 3 through 4, that's my final direction. For the enemy has persecuted my soul. This is, I believe, David writing. He has crushed my life to the ground. He has made me dwell in darkness like those who have long been dead. Therefore, my spirit is overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is distressed. Describe anybody here this week? Hopefully not, but probably. Conclusion, David got overwhelmed. He experienced that feeling where hopelessness sets in because everything looks too difficult. And nothing major even has to be happening for that to happen. But that feeling is real. And we're all there at some point. One man quoted that we're all in the gutter. Just some of us can look up and see the stars. You know, we see the hope, the promise. We're all in the same boat. But it's when you can look up. David did that in Psalms 51. Like, he had screwed up double royally and times pi, you know, like he really made, you know, a mess of things. And yet he found this mercy that wasn't even Old Testament. Like he jumped right out of the book. He crossed the line. Got into New Covenant stuff. Because he deserved not good. But he cheated. Like the whole tabernacle of David was a big cheat. He wasn't supposed to be getting away with any of that stuff, but he did. He found favor with the Lord. He broke out of stuff. It's true. That Ark of the Covenant was never supposed to be in a tent. Like. And yet that's what God chose, you know, shows up in Acts 15, you know, the tabernacle of David. He loved it. Because David decided to bring worship into that setting. And the Lord blessed him for it. So David's overwhelmed, to say the least. Psalm 69, verses 2 and 3. Psalm 69, verses 2 and 3. I sink in deep mire. I know none of you relate to any of this, so just tolerate it for a moment. Brady, are you still on track for line for next week? This helps him not be able to get out.
As of this morning, I wasn't, but as of now.
Brady's going to share next week, and the Lord will help him. It'll be good. As of this morning, I was not, but now I am. Huh. Yeah, I wonder what the rest of that story is. I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I have come into deep waters where the floods overflow me. I am weary with my crying. My throat is dry. My eyes fail while I wait for my God. So, wow. Pretty desperate. I mean, simple terms. This is describing a really nasty, you know, hey, how you doing? Had a bad night. How you feeling? Crashed, trashed, hopeless, you know, right here. So that's just two passages of David, and this comes up different times from different people. David was a little more honest than most, and he would describe his really bad seasons and the depth of despair that he would fall into. And then when you read his life, you go, oh my God, no wonder you were, you know. You got the king himself throwing spears at you. You're not having a good day. Everyone's forsaken you. And he had a couple relapses of that in his life. Here's what it looks like to be overwhelmed by God. In the same chapter, verses 16 through 17. Hear me, O Lord, for your loving kindness is good. Turn to me according to the multitude of your tender mercies, and do not hide your face from your servant, for I am in trouble. Hear me speedily. I'll read the next verse. Draw near to my soul and redeem it. Deliver me because of my enemies. So being overwhelmed by life is when your focus is on what has happened, what you're feeling, like that's what you're looking at. Being overwhelmed by God is when you stop and you look up. And you start to meditate on who he is and what he's done. And remember what he's done in the past. We all have some sort of history. So it's when you stop and you start recalling the history. You get off today's page. We all have a headliner running in our lives right now. Whatever your page looks like, front page, that you woke up to this morning. And you set that aside and you get back to focusing on who the Lord is and who he says he is. And back to Psalms 143, verse 5. Let's turn there. 145, 143, verse 5. Jeez. I'm in good company, I know that. Yeah. even the Generation 2 people, especially the girls that have babies, they're forgetting everything too. I'm like, oh, that's such a relief to me. I remember the days of old. I meditate on all your works. I muse on the work of your hands. And that word muse means to ponder. Ponder. Now let's look at one more verse, passage, Psalms 34:3. I had been teaching in that earlier, Psalms 34:3. If you, and in verse 3 it says, "Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together." So this is what we do in very simple terms when we worship, is we magnify the Lord. How do you do that? Very simple. If you imagine having a magnifying glass and you're trying to, what would you do with that magnifying glass if you're trying to look at something with it? You would, like, there was an ant, a ladybug. Anybody else have ladybugs in their house? Here's what I'm really, we have stink bugs too. Anybody else have? Why did God make them? The ladybugs don't bother me. They're kind of cute. As long as they don't bite you in the neck, you're okay. But the stink bugs, they just bother me. They just show up. You know, I'm in my study and I look, and there's one on the curtain or on my desk. Like, just, they don't even move. They're just sitting there like. So you don't want to touch it or squeeze it. So I always go get a paper towel or Kleenex and I get it wet. This is my trick. Get it wet and wrap them up in a wet and then throw them in the waste paper basket or flush them down the toilet or whatever. Never put them outside. They will come back. So the magnifying glass is it's very simple. You look at something through that. Why? So you can see the intricacies of it. So that becomes your focus. And that simple term is what we need to do with the Lord. And by doing that, you'll start to change. This is worship. Magnifying, looking at the Lord and getting everything else out of your vision, starting to meditate on who He is and what He is. And if we establish habit of this, it really changes. It changes. That is worship. That is exalting the Lord. When you magnify and you look at Him and you remember what He says and you start to meditate and you read Psalms till something jumps off the page at you and you find your ways to find ways, and we have access to a lot of things now. So find ways to get the Lord big again. Chair number one, healing is a promise. Chair number two, healing is a problem. Why? Because in chair number one, big problems, little God. But in chair number one, big God, little problems. And doesn't that change everything? Magnify the Lord. Let's magnify the Lord together. Let's exalt His name. That's what that's what it means. We talk more about Him. We keep our focus on Him. What's going on in your life? I mean, here's the real tell. What are you looking at? When you're overwhelmed, you're focusing on the stuff. And then you tell your friends as if you need to verify the facts. I'm sure they're all well established. Your finances are blah, and your relationships are eek, and your health is, you know. And you can get a couple people to agree with you. But all you've done is look at them. All you've done is magnified, and the people you've told really can't do much about it. Unless it's your mother and you're hoping for money. I don't know. You know what? So we don't have to be unreal. We don't have to act like we don't have any of those things. It's fine to acknowledge them, but don't magnify them. And we'll spend days and weeks and months on end, seasons of our life, focusing on that. And I get it. I have great compassion for myself and everybody else. When you got an issue, it's tough not to do that. When it's coming down on you,
And sooner or later, you have a serious enough situation that it's like, oh, I can't top that. Yeah, wow, whew, whoa. That's really bad. But it still hasn't helped you, has it? But focusing on the Lord and magnifying the Lord, that this is, and this is why it is good to spend time to give energy to worship and meditating. Something in my heart clicked. I went, yes. It's like I have a lot of stuff up here. I told Phyllis, I said, my gosh, I know so much, but I still got a ton of it needs to get, you know, down to my heart revelation. Like, are you tired of all the things you know, but the lack of what you have revelation on? And that, yeah, that, and that leaves us powerless and passionless. The worst is it leaves us passionless. We just feel dead. We're going through and you're faithful. We're faithful. We keep showing up. I'm glad. Keep showing up for church. You keep showing up for your marriage. You keep showing up for your job. Good. That's good. But there's so much more. There's so much more. Don't settle for that. There's a life of adventure. There's a life of passion. Even in the normal, everything changes when we get connected, and it's relationally, and the relational, and the Lord is big and magnified in our midst. And that's why it's so important. The testimonies are so important. We share our story. We have a good word, and we speak of the kindness and the goodness of the Lord wherever we go. It starts changing things. Can change a bad conversation good. We can change hopelessness into good. I've met a few leaders that, like, when they pray, I'm like, I want to jump off of a bridge. I'm tormented. Like, I can't stand. Like, I feel like I got to go over here, go to a quiet room, and apologize to heaven for the whining that just went on. That's not prayer. Letting God know how bad things are. Really? Have you thought about that lately? You can mention it, just, you know, but he's already there. If you need to get it off your chest, then go ahead. But Lord, this is what was key about David. He didn't stop there. The psalm didn't end with the whining and complaining. I mean, isn't somebody like, I am drowning here. Then pretty soon he's talking good about God again. Cannot help himself. Great worshiper. In the end, by the time he wrapped up, bless the Lord. That's what we should look like. That's what it should look like. And when we do that, worship will start to transcend us. I'm going to do a test on you today. I was asking the Lord how to do this. It's cute. You know this, I have this new, I go to this doctor he's a medical doctor, but he's also a nutritionalist and tests me and does all kinds of things in different ways. And some of it's over my head, and I just keep taking the supplements anyways because I don't like the medication. So I'm good. I do it. But wow, some of it's like really crazy, you know. And there are some unique things about our body systems. And a lot of times the way he tests me and checks things, I don't know if you've ever been to a chiropractor that does muscle testing and what, like if you put sugar in your hand, test your strength, put sugar in your hand, you will be weak. That's all I need to say about that. You will be weaker. They pour raw sugar in your hand and you will lose strength. Anyways, that's true of anything your body's struggling with, that you're allergic to, and so they can test you. Sometimes they put things in your hand or to see what help is going to help you, they'll put that supplement and they're all whole things, you know, natural things. And there are things that you can do, like he'll have me stand and have my arm out and he'll see if I'm strong, and he'll put his two fingers on some of you might not like me very much after I tell you this. Anyways, he puts his fingers here and I'm strong. And then he just turns that and puts his right there, and I'm weak. And it has to do with our body systems and polarity and different things that are real things in our bodies. The medical profession doesn't like to acknowledge those, but they're real things. Like, so. Anyways, you can believe that or not believe that, but I don't play games with him, and I mean, it's crazy how our body is and how it functions and what happens with all that. So he did another, I don't even know the name of it. He put like this thing under my chest, had me lay down. And then when the little chime went off, bling, bling, I get up and I stand and let it do the rest of its test. And I don't feel anything. It's just as a monitor. And it checked, it's called something. It checked my body systems, this other stuff, and my fitness level. Like, I didn't do very good because I've been not feeling good and in the house too much. So I got to get active, more active. But it showed that. So, having said all that to mess you up, I'm going to read. I don't want you to turn there. You're going to have to trust me that I read a real scripture. I want you to just listen. I want you to interact in your heart. You can vocally interact. I want you to pay attention. This is what David, this was the level of experience that he had with the Lord. Again, he didn't go read a book to figure this stuff out. He knew this stuff from revelation, from the Spirit, from worshiping, from being close to the Lord. That's an interesting way to put it. When I start reading the psalm, which you'll know some of the scriptures, I'm like, And I want you to kind of do an evaluation of yourself. I'm not going to do it, but I want you to just pay attention to what you can relate to and what you're like, I don't know that. I've not experienced that. Like, I don't click with that. And whatever you haven't experienced, it's kind of a test to show you, then you got blockage spiritually. You have a hindrance in your heart that you don't know that about the Lord, or know who you are, know who he is to you, how much he cares about you. And you'll see, these are all really neat things. But you go, and you'll be like, whoa, no wonder I'm struggling. Like, this is what I believe is accessible to us. I'm going to read 18 verses. Just kind of listen, and I'll try to separate all the different verses, and just kind of say yes or no to yourself. You can say it out loud. Interaction would be good. Like, whoa, that's great, or no, I'm not even there close, okay? This will be fun. Here we go. Just kind of relax, sit down, fold your hands, hum, do whatever you know. Lord, you know everything about me that there is to know. You've examined my innermost being with your loving gaze. Do you know that? Could you write that verse? As you sit before the Lord, could you write this love letter to him? Oh, why, by the way, did any of you write love letters to your husbands, wives? Good job, Marty, Senior, Dwayne. Of course they would. They are models for, you know. Phyllis and I did this too. We did. We emailed each other. Whoa, awesome. You know, it's a really good thing to do. And I don't like flattery, and I don't like things, but I said to Phyllis, I said, it was nice that you wrote what you did. Like, if you meant that, like, anytime you mean that and feel that, it is, well, I was just saying, I don't want just the words, but it mattered that she said what she said. It matters that we care about each other. It matters that we interact with one another and with the people around you, and to take time to make sure that you say you love them. By the way, is today Valentine's Day or what? So this is a love letter to Jesus. Could you send the same one? Wow. Just when I think I'm not with it, I get right on track. So it's Valentine's Day, and we're going to read Psalms 139. Verse number 2, you perceive every movement of my heart and soul and understand my every thought before it even enters my mind. David had a revelation about the Lord. He believed that the Lord knew him so intimately that he knew every thought that he had before he even thought it. Do you have that relationship with the Lord? Do you know that? And again, I don't want anybody to be condemned, but I just want to let you know, if you don't know that, then there's blockage. If you don't know that, then there's more revelation to get, and I'd go after it. I would not be allowing David to have something you don't have. I'm just saying. Verses 3 and 4, David writes to the Lord, "You are so intimately aware of me, Lord. You read my heart like an open book and know all the words I will speak before I even start a sentence. You know the steps I will take before my journey even begins." Do you know that about him? Do you know that he knows your steps? He knows. See, if you embrace it, it starts to change. You feel cared about, like that he knows you that much. This isn't about being paranoid. This is not about trying to hide from God. Hopefully you're beyond that. But we can come into saying we're believers and still be so separated from a father that passionately loves us. And we cannot afford to live like that. You cannot afford to live with these separations. Verse 5, "You're always ahead of me to prepare the way, and you follow behind, protecting and guarding me. Your hand of love is upon my life, imparting your blessing to me." So if you know that, then you probably would never whine or complain about anything. No, I didn't think so. Okay, good. You'd never feel hopeless because you know he's watching and he cares and he's, yeah, okay. Verse 6, "This is just too wonderful, deep, and incomprehensible. Your knowledge of me is beyond my understanding." So now when you come before the Lord and you start to remember, you realize he knows me, he knows everything, you just start to express, I love you, you're amazing, wow, just awesome. Verse 7, "Where could I go from your spirit? Where could I run and hide from your face?" How did David know that? Because he did some running in his days. He experienced that no matter where he went, the Lord was still with him. So he's relating that back to the Lord. I can't go anywhere to get away from you. And that's a good thing. Even when I feel like going and crying and pouting and doing whatever. Isn't it so adorable when our two-year-olds pout, cry, go, you know, do a big deal? I'm mad, I'm not talking to you. It's not so cute when we're doing that at 35. That's when we start expecting each other, like you, honestly. Why do we? Because if you knew the Lord, you knew he didn't leave you. You may have crashed. Get yourself together and remember who he is. Remember what you know. And just like this story from Jenna, thank you so much for that, Jenna. Like these things we cry out about and we're struck, and the things that he uniquely will, he will show you and provide for you. Does it matter if she has that book in the big scheme of things? No, but if her father in heaven wants her to have, get her history of him, of how much he cares about her, then he'll make sure he does these things. Why? So that she will know. That's who he is. He'll do unique things. Why does he? So that you will know that he cares. He wants each of us to have that history. He wants each of us to have that testimony. He doesn't want you living off of somebody else's. He wants you to have your own. He wants to prove to each one of us, I'm there. I'm with you. I've got your back. No matter where you go, like, I'm lost. No, you're not lost. I know where you are. I'm alone. No, you're not alone. I'm right here. I'm with you. I never left you. Look up. You're in the gutter. Look at the stars. Verse 8, "If I go up to heaven, you're there. If I go down to the realm of the dead, you're there too." Verse 9, if I fly with wings into the shining dawn, you're there. If I fly into the radiant sunset, you're waiting. You're there waiting. So David's writing this because he experienced, somehow he knew this. He experienced this. This wasn't in Catechism 101. Verse 10, wherever I go, your hand will guide me. Your strength will empower me. How did he know that? Because he experienced being led and guided through some really difficult times and situations. He went, oh my gosh, I'm running for my life. And here you just showed me, turn left, not right. Go high, go low. You know, like you were there with me. And everybody else was mad at me, but you were still watching over me and helping me. Verse 11, it's impossible to disappear from you or to ask the darkness to hide. For your presence is everywhere, bringing light into my night. Verse 12, there is no such thing as darkness with you. The night to you is as bright as the day. This just trumps darkness, whatever form it comes in your life. There's no difference between the two. Verse 13, you formed my innermost being, shaping my delicate inside and my intricate outside, and wove them all together in my mother's womb. He did not have medical books to study this. You understand? He got a revelation about this. He's speaking out of revelation. And how often this is quoted? You knew me. I mean, it's so comforting to quote this verse. You knew me in my mother's womb. You knew me when I was conceived. You knew me from the beginnings. Verse 14, I thank you, God, for making me most so mysteriously and complex. Everything you do is marvelously breathtaking. It simply amazes me to think about it, how thoroughly you know me, Lord. We'll end up getting frustrated with ourselves, with our emotions, with our this or that. Start kind of cursing yourself, like, man, if I didn't have this temper, I'd, you know, whatever. If I didn't have this proneness, if I didn't have this, didn't have that. Be careful. Be careful talking like that about yourself. Because you may have some hindrance, some things may need to come under in control in your life, but be careful cursing it. Because you are wonderfully and fearfully made. You don't want to lose the ability to be angry. That's how we were made. God has the same emotion. So be careful. Just get the light on the issue, and you won't have to start cutting off parts and cutting out things. Well, honestly, you can start cursing who you are. It's very, very bad. There's a lot of that going on under the guise of Christianity. Under the guise of being faithful, under the guise of whatever. I was talking, my mother-in-law was telling us a story that happened. I was so disturbing. Of course, Phyllis heard it before. I hadn't, that there was a woman in the that lived in the out in the country here that they were pretty poor, I believe, and she was going to get baptized, and she came and asked somebody for their wedding dress because, and I don't know what church she was a part of or where, I didn't know if it was the church or if it was her idea, I don't know, but she believed that she had to be baptized in a white dress, so she borrowed somebody's wedding dress, and that's cool, that's okay, but it was cold out like this, and she got baptized in this, like in February, March, and would not let anybody put a coat on her, and she walked home from there in the country because she thought this is what she should do. She shouldn't do anything. It would be wrong to put a coat on. It'd be like, she got that in her mind, and she did die. And very shortly after that, she died. Like she died from it. And you go, whoa, oh my gosh. How perverted for the enemy to come and take something that's precious to kill somebody with it because of a wrong thinking. See, we need true revelation. Now, we look at that and go, that's, whoa, But there are secret things in many of your lives, how you talked about yourself, how you feel about yourself, how you vows you've made that are very unhealthy. And the light needs to shine because these things are slowly killing you. You may not have pneumonia from it, but it affects you. And until the light comes in and shines the truth, and your Father in heaven wants you to see and to know. I'm going to wrap up real quickly here. Verse 15, you even shaped every bone in my body. Excuse me. When you created me in the secret place, carefully, skillfully shaping me from nothing to something. Verse 16, you saw who you created me to be before I came to be. There's another, do you know that about yourself? Can you accept that about yourself? Then you've got a blockage. There's an untruth there. David had a revelation that we all need. This needs resolved. I need to be honest with you. It's not okay. It's not okay to live like this, and it's definitely not Christian. It's definitely not holy. It's definitely not righteous. It's a perverted thing. The enemy would love you to think that about yourself. Before I'd ever seen the light of day, the number of my days you planned for me to live were all recorded in your book. How did he know that? The revelation about that. And verse 17 and 18, every single moment you are thinking of me, how precious and wonderful to consider that you cherish me constantly in your every thought. Oh God, your desires toward me are more than the grains of sand on every shore. When I awake each morning, you're still thinking of me. Do you know that? When you awake in the morning, that the Lord is thinking of you? David knew that. David knew that. So, let's pray. Father, I just ask for truth and ask for revelation to come to us in the areas that we just went, wow, I don't know that. I don't feel that.